The White Network presents Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn. Your host, Carolyn Yeager.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to a new edition of Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn Yeager. That's me, returning to you after a Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year season break. My last program was November 17th, so that's a good long break. But it's over now, and here we are again, facing a brand new year. The year started out with Gunter Deckert on January 2nd, 3 days ago, entering prison, and today's program is dedicated to him. It's about hoaxes that are pulled off in order to achieve political objectives of the globalist world government leaders. But just to keep it simple and down home, let's say the Jewish-controlled United States government. The first great hoax was, of course, the Holocaust, the one, in my way of thinking, not would be the first one ever, but the one of our modern, the modern cast of our politics, which was perpetrated by the Allied partners and victors of World War II and in compliance with their Jewish Zionist overlords. It's because of this Holocaust hoax that our always courageous friend and comrade Gunter Deckert was sentenced to prison again, this time for only 5 months, but for a trifle that was no crime whatsoever, but simply helping to translate a book into German from Italian, an act he didn't even think was illegal at the time. This particular case has dragged out, as he has used up every available appeal, but in the end, the powers ruling the, quote, smaller Germany of today, unquote, as Gunter likes to say, insist that he must serve the time, even though it is an expense for the taxpayers of Germany who don't even know about it, because these kinds of imprisonment of revisionists are not covered in the German press or on TV or whatever. The only people that do write something about it is the Jewish press, because they like to crow and brag about their power to their own people, and you can usually find something about it there, but that's it. I'm going to take a little bit of time here to make a few comments here, so just hope everybody will be patient who's waiting online. Contributions can be made to Gunter's family. I will post details on the program page, but cash in any form can be sent by registered mail to Gunter Deckert at capital PF period 100245. In parentheses, G period D period. That's PF is like our post office box. So it's PF 100245 and in parentheses, G period D period in capitals. And the next line, D, which stands for Deutschland, D 69442 Weinheim / capital B. Weinheim is spelled Weinheim. I think it's worthwhile saying all this because I want to impress upon the listeners that, what a sacrifice some people are making and that they do need some attention. Gunter writes, my wife will let me know, if this donations come, to her, and she will acknowledge receipt by private letter or card. Do not mention the amount of money in the mail to me. He means to his prison address, because there's also a prison address that you can write to. And this is all, I have all this on my website, carolynyeager.net, about Gunter, and it's also in the current January issue of the First Freedom newspaper, if you get that. And I will put it also on the program page. So you don't have to be remembering it here, but for those who won't see any of this, they at least have the address to his wife, but still address it to Gunter Deckert. Okay, and he says, the system should not be given supporter addresses this way, by telling, if you write to Gunter in prison, don't talk about any money you've sent to him or anything like that. He says, "What doesn't kill me makes me stronger. So with this in mind, my best comradely greetings and loyalty to our kin and people. I wish everyone a very good year of 2013, full of success and the best health possible." Now, others, just let me mention that others who are currently in prison in Germany for trying to expose this Holocaust hoax are Gerhard Ittner, who I've written about on my website, Horst Mahler, who people should be familiar with, Axel Möller, and in Austria, Wolfgang Fröhlich. So that's it for that subject. Now, before I go on to my guests, I want to mention something that I just have to mention. I told this person I was going to do something about his sending me emails that I don't want. And this is Douglas Pearson, who I'm told is a swarthy Jew who works for Harold Covington. I mean, I know he works with Harold Covington, but I didn't. But I'm told he's a Jew who lives in Canada. He hangs out that's Harold Covington. Okay, Pearson sends out emails, and I don't want or need them because there's nothing that I'm interested in there. And I've written to him very nicely and asked him to take me off his mailing list. He replied, super friendly, "Oh, Carolyn, of course I will. I am so sorry. I realize you don't need this." And then I continued to get them. And then I wrote to him again. And then he said, "Oh, well, that's a problem with Hotmail. Oh, they're so screwed up. I'm changing my mailer." And he said, "I'm putting you on a different list where you won't get them. I don't want to be on any list." But anyway, after that, I still was getting them. I wrote to him again, and I threatened him, and I told him I was going to take action. And I called him some names. And he wrote back again, real friendly, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I'll take care of it. Well, you know, I'm still," at least 5 days ago, "I'm still getting these emails. So I decided I would talk about it on the air. I want you to know this person is Douglas Pearson. Some of you might think he's a good guy, but I think he's up to no good. So, now, dealing with phone calls today, I wasn't sure when I wrote the announcement for today's show that I would even have one guest. But then, because I hadn't heard from Don for a couple of days, but then he checked in, and then I've got another guest who came along via Hadding Scott. So we've got a great program here coming up, and therefore, even though I invited you to call in to the show today, because I thought I might be by myself. I'm still inviting you to call in to the show, but not until the second hour gets underway. All right. The number is 1-830-443-4911. Now I'm going to introduce my two guests, and I apologize to you two gentlemen for my lengthy opening. I actually thought, I already said that. Okay. So let's start with Don, who's been on this show twice before. Don, our lawyer friend from California. Hi, Don.
Hey, good morning.
Yeah, it's morning for you.
Oh, that's right. It's afternoon for you. We're in different time zones.
Yes, and you know we have somebody new here, new to the White Network, and that is, it's evening for him, close to nighttime, because he's in England, and that is Martin. I'm very glad to have you here, Martin.
Yep, hi there, Carolyn, and it's good to be here.
Well, good to have you. I think we've got the makings here for a great show today, and we have a nice group of listeners. I want to thank those who have tuned in live and for doing so and joining us here to give us some moral support. So now I have a little more to say before I let you guys go at it. I tried to set the stage for the reasons for seeing the Sandy Hook story in the extreme way that will be presented here today. Let me just say a little more, and then I'll be done for the time being. I don't think any further convincing information about Sandy Hook will be forthcoming following their investigation. I believe what we have is all we're going to get, you know, because that's been the case with other of these type of events. If you were waiting for better scientific, forensic, and or other explanations to the Holocaust, never came. Nothing better ever came. Instead, what eventually came was prison sentences and laws making the questioning of it illegal. So the same with 9/11. No better explanations have ever come about how all this stuff took place, which doesn't make scientific or forensic sense. So they haven't made the questioning of it illegal yet, because I think their disinfo campaign is still working. And it is working, basically. And all the others, then there are so many other smaller events that have taken place that we could call hoaxes. I can't go into those. These are just the two major ones, but lots of others. And now we have Sandy Hook. And we've had a lot of mass shootings over the years, particularly these more recent years, building up. You know, it's always some lone, crazed gunman, usually, who's blamed for it. And this one, though, seems to be is the latest, and it seems to be the worst, really, because of how it's involved children. But it's also the least believable. And I just want to bring up here real quick that the story about the boy who cried wolf, I think it's part of that syndrome that we're finding here, that Sandy Hook is like that. You know, we no longer, in that story, there was a little boy. I was told that when I was a little girl. A little boy ran around in his village crying, "Oh, a wolf is here." People were afraid of wolves then. A wolf is in the village. A wolf is in the village. And people would all run out and look for the wolf, and then there was no wolf. And one day, there really was a wolf, and he went out and cried wolf, and nobody would respond to him at all. And I think he got eaten by the wolf. So I think that was what happened. And this is what it is. I think we're a little bit, while people basically believe the story, there's not too much, it's kind of passed over quickly, and we'll discuss all of those things, as we go on. So, let Don get on first, Don, why don't you, I know you've been interested in this right from the start, and why don't you tell us, how you see it?
Well, of course, I heard the coverage on the Sandy Hook shooting the day that it occurred. It was unavoidable. Every radio station was talking about it, and even some of the stations were they preempted other radio shows in order to give coverage to this, as though it were some kind of presidential assassination or you know, a 9/11 event. I thought that was a little unusual at that stage that it they would actually preempt other shows. But they did, and of course it was a horrifying, terrible thing. And if you've seen as many of these things as most of us have, in my case, going back to the JFK assassination in 1963, it was as though they were poised at the microphones, waiting for it to happen. And of course, the political agenda that clicked in the immediate aftermath of the JFK assassination was it was hate speech and conservatives and hatred in the right wing, and of course. Now, you know, half a century later, we know the right wing had nothing to do with killing John F. Kennedy. It appears that it was a rogue element in American intelligence and in organized crime, to the extent that we have any knowledge of what actually happened. The only thing we can really say for certainty is that Harvey Oswald didn't shoot him for a whole bunch of reasons. But the Sandy Hook thing was very similar to that in that you had the automatic calls for gun control and new laws before any substantial facts were known. The initial coverage talked about two shooters. There was a story that said the rifle that was deemed ultimately to have done the killings was actually found in the trunk of the car after the shooter had killed himself. But all of these conflicting things that you see in light of these shootings, it's not surprising that you have conflicting, inconsistent stories.
Don't you think some of those stories are put out on purpose?
I
hear the police are saying that the rifle was not found in the trunk of the car. Of course, now they say the rifle was used to kill all the victims. So that is a story that has no, according to the authorities, that story has no basis.
Well, the problem is you've got a media that repeats everything without verifying anything, and it really doesn't know much about
guns. Well, maybe they do it on purpose.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't know what their motive would be to start a rumor that there were two shooters if the official version is that a lone person did it. I don't know why they would do that. It seems inconsistent with their own political agenda. to raise the specter of a conspiracy when the official version is that it was a single person. But the thing that's really struck me about this shooting in the first few days after it happened was the fact that there were no survivors, there were no wounded. And that hit me like a thunderclap because in my awareness of all these other shootings, it seemed to me like the wounded actually outnumbered the victims. And in most cases, that turns out to have been the case. I did a kind of a detailed historical analysis of mass shootings. Now, it turns out, and this is with 27 people shot, and that to get a 100% fatality rate, or 96% as it has turned out, there was a supposed wounded adult, a teacher who turned up a few days after the event, who was shot in the hand, the foot, and the leg, and scurried for cover into a room and escaped being killed for that reason. So presumably there is one eyewitness who did see at least one shooter, but we haven't heard any more from her. We haven't seen any security cam video either. And there was one fellow went to the school district website and saw that they actually do have surveillance cameras, and they have policies regarding them, and they have a 5-day retention period on the surveillance videos. So these things apparently were in place, but we've seen not a single bit of security cam video. I tried to find it for several days after that, and I got, there was one hit on YouTube, and then that was linked to something else, and you clicked on that, and I got a big fat virus in my computer as a result of that, and I've never been able to find anything else. But even with a single wounded person, which is way outside the statistical norm for mass shootings, you still have a 96% fatality rate, which is higher than any other mass shooting I've ever been able to find. The Aurora, Colorado theater shooting in 2012, earlier this year, the guy shot 71 people, but only 12 died and 59 were wounded. So you got an 83% survival rate. He had the same kind of weapon that was purportedly used in Sandy Hook. That is an AR-15 semi-automatic rifle. It shoots a cartridge called a .223. It's .22 caliber. It's very much smaller than the traditional military rounds, which were .30 caliber or .32 caliber. Now, this cartridge is not a death ray, as the media would have us believe. It's the military version of a number of similar civilian sporting cartridges that were designed to be used on jackrabbits and ground squirrels and woodchucks. These cartridges are not even legal for deer hunting. So the idea that this is some kind of death ray is a gross exaggeration. Like to review the other mass shootings.
Let's let Martin though say that, sure. Because I think you brought up the main some main points in that you see it as being not what they say it is, but not going so far as some people are now going, that it never really happened. Nobody was murdered, and it was mainly like a media created event. So let me see if that's the way you see that, Martin. And Martin is a writer, and as he said, he lives in England. Okay, hi, Martin.
Hi, yeah, I mean, that is the way I see this. I'm satisfied that this is nothing more than a very elaborate TV drama. You know, I believe that, we're never really told about this, but, you know, I suspect, a big part of the mass media superstructure, you know, Reuters, the BBC and CNN and so on, AP, AFP in France, I believe that it's all really little more than the propaganda wing of NATO and the United Nations, you know, with some sort of extra sort of entertainment and trivia and bits and pieces thrown in for good measure. And I believe the news media is essentially part of the military intelligence network, and this is what people are probably missing. You know, I think even the likes of the John F. Kennedy Center have openly admitted in their own papers that the main military weapon today is simply that most people trust the news. So they may know about editorial bias, you know, left wing, right wing, liberal versus conservative and all of this nonsense, but they still trust the basic message and the basic story that's being conveyed. So I personally believe that around the world at the moment, the press are actually making a lot of use of digital portraits and digital paintings. I think the military apparatus have some very powerful software now. whereby they can actually create these paintings that look like real photographs of real people. They're bringing together a variety of material, different facial types, facial structures, and putting together a very realistic looking image of a new fictional, essentially fictional person. You know, it looks very convincing.
Wow.
Maybe I think there's something to it. You can kind of see there's a kind of blurred effect, and I think when you know what to look for, you can kind of flag up these images as being a bit suspect. But I think you need somebody to kind of nudge you in that direction first, and then it becomes a bit more obvious that something much more sinister is at play.
Mm-hmm. This brings to mind, this really isn't directly related, but you know, I'm struck because I don't have TV, I don't watch TV. If I did have a TV, it'd be some little old thing, I'm sure. These big, huge TV screens that people have now, and when I have been to someone's house and see that, I'm just amazed at this high definition television, you know, that it's so real. It's more real than reality. I mean, it looks somehow sharper and more real than reality. And you can just get lost in that, I think. There's no secret to me why they want people to have these giant high definition TVs to just get sucked up into them. And so that makes a lot of sense. And also, I've been working on a program for Monday, of a Holocaust, fraudulent photographs, photo fakery. And even back then, there's one photo of, that comes to mind of a bunch of little children who are, look like they're just totally diseased and full of sores or beat up or whatever. Just their bodies are all screwed up. And they're sitting there, and they're supposed to be kids who have been experimented on by the Nazis. And when you look close, you see that mostly their bodies are all paintings. Their faces are real, but their bodies are all painted. And it's so clear and yet this picture is still circulated all the time. It's very famous of, you know, a typical, picture of the Holocaust. So there you go. And they're much, as you say, they're much, much better at it now.
Oh, yeah.
That's just the crude beginnings of what they could do.
Yeah, I believe there are entire departments out there somewhere that make up bogus news stories all the time. You know, it's their main preoccupation. You know, it's their job. And I think this is just the beginning. I think it's not just serial shootings. I think some nonsense stories will be put out there that have no obvious political agenda or political motivation behind them. But it's just, you know, it's just being done to kind of test the gullibility of the public.
Exactly what I think. Yeah, they're testing. Exactly, yeah. They're really testing to see if we'll buy it or not. I don't know what kind of a plan they have if we don't, or if somehow something gets all exposed. They just kind of ignore it, I think, and cover it up like they do with these other things when people expose things. They just don't talk about it, and then the mass of the people never hear about it.
Yeah, I mean, well, Carolyn, have you actually seen the YouTube video of Robbie Parker, or the man who's presented under the identity of Robbie Parker from Newtown? Because
I have.
You know, yeah, it's very telling. I mean, he was having a very good laugh with the people at the side before going on, you know, giving his delivery to the TV cameras, and it was just so false and contrived. And
makes a huge impression on everybody who sees it. Don, have you seen that Robbie Parker video?
I'm not aware of the name, but I have seen a fair amount of the video where there is a man who is laughing and joking before he goes on to talk about his child that was supposedly murdered.
That's it. Yeah, well, what kind of impression did that make on you?
I thought that was extremely bizarre.
Well, did you make any explanation in your own mind about it, or?
Well, it's still pretty preliminary for me. You see a lot of stuff on YouTube and everything, and it's not always easy to authenticate it right away. Mm-hmm. I thought if it was authentic and it was something of a grieving parent, I can't imagine any grieving parent laughing like that, behaving like that, on the same day that his child was brutally murdered. I don't know anybody who laughed.
I don't think it was the same day. Was it the same day? Martin was, and then there was the other scene with Obama, which was a few days later. But why don't you tell us about that with Robbie Martin family and meeting Obama?
Well, I don't actually remember that one particular incident, but there's a lot of good videos on YouTube, and I don't know if they've been pulled down yet, but lots of eyewitnesses were caught kind of laughing and giggling at the camera. It wasn't just the Robbie Parker incident. There's quite a few of them. Somebody else also sort of revealed that the score sign was actually held up outside the fire station at one point. So the fire station and the area outside was being portrayed as where the school was located, you know. So there's lots of other inconsistencies like that.
Oh, I saw that, and I couldn't figure out what it was or what it meant. So that's what it's supposed to be? That is that pretty legitimate, that somebody was trying to portray the fire department as a school? What, to show a lot of activity around there or something?
I mean, who knows? I mean, I've actually put a lot of my own research into these sorts of incidents. Up on a forum, and I don't know if you're happy for me to mention the forum, but I've looked at a lot of earlier incidents, say for example in the UK, the Hungerford massacre in 1987, which was a very similar one, and that was used as the pretext to ban semi-automatic weapons in the UK in 1988, and it was very similar. You know, it was carried out in a very small town of about 4,000 people. So you have to bear in mind there was hardly anybody out and about during the day, very quiet village. So it would have been possible for the military and senior police to run a training exercise based on a fictional serial shooting. And then some other agency puts together the images for this supposed event, and it's portrayed to the general public as a real event that really happened, when it was just simply play acting. Now, at some point, obviously, there are, you know, because of poor communication between the different actors or agencies involved, you get mishaps and mistakes and inconsistencies, which, you know, you have to look into it, you know, more carefully to pick these out. But, you know, there's always something that isn't quite right. You know, I mean, I personally would always look to the hospital, you know, always, you know, try to find out, more information about the background of the hospital, the CEO and the board that manages the hospital that the victims are allegedly taken to. Because with the Hungerford massacre in 87 in England, they were actually taken to a military hospital called Princess Margaret. Okay, and this was actually, it's basically like an empty ward on a military hospital, nobody around. It was actually run by the Parachute Regiment, the very sort of high-class elite army unit. And you're just essentially relying on the word of a few key individuals high up in the army, you know, the top Freemasons and so on, that real people with real gunshot wounds were treated on the hospital ward, you know, on that day. You're just simply relying on their word. You know, there's no, if you want a more independent source, you know, to back up the official story, you'll never find one.
Yeah. Go ahead and tell us what forum this is. If people want to go and look for your work, I'd like to.
Yeah. I mean, it's on cluesforum.info, which is hosted by a Norwegian researcher.
Okay. Clues. Just spell that out for us.
Yeah. Clues. Clues.
Mm-hmm.
And then forum, so that's all one word, clues info. Forum, and then .info.
Okay.
And you know, there's lots of researchers are contributing their findings in there, and I think Simon Hyten, or Simon Shack as he's also known, does a fairly good job at moderating the discussion, because it's really looking at some signs of fake images being presented to the public as authentic images, you know, in the press, and just looking for inconsistencies in the reporting and things that don't quite add up. They tried to keep away from wilder claims and actually look into the nuts and the bolts, you know, bringing together all the different aspects, all the different clues, and trying to weave together a kind of hypothesis. So it's much more intelligent, I find, than a lot of the other sort of researchers out there.
Yeah, sounds like it. That's very good. That's good for us to know that. Well, you know, Don is a lawyer, so lawyers are careful. And he's right to be careful. He waits for a while. So Don, come back in on the okay. Discussion here. All right.
Well, yeah, a couple of things. I enjoyed your description of the Hungerford massacre. I didn't enjoy it. I mean, no one enjoys hearing about children being murdered. But I thought there were some extraordinary similarities between that and the JFK assassination. You said they were taken to a military hospital, and there was very limited access given to the medical information to the extent that any was. If you followed the JFK history, there is a huge amount of controversy about forged medical records, forged x-rays, medical records destroyed, and things like that. So you tend to see kind of an interesting pattern where access to information is carefully guarded. There was another question I wanted to ask Martin. You seem to have a lot of, you mentioned NATO and the United Nations. I read something a few years ago about a NATO operation called Operation Gladio, which was responsible for carrying out various acts of bombing and terrorism in Europe, and which included school bus attacks and the killing of children. And supposedly this was blown wide open when the Italian government conducted some investigation or criminal prosecutions into their activities in Italy. And I wondered if you had done any research or had any information about Operation Gladio.
Yeah, I mean, I personally believe that Gladio is a form of or part of the COINTELPRO program, which is, that is to say, if it's true that the news media are part of the NATO propaganda machine, then anything that we hear about is something that they want us to hear about. So in this case, Gladio, I believe, it was not necessarily a real organization, and those things didn't necessarily happen. I mean, I'm not satisfied any of these things happened until I see real hard information from a neutral or independent source, which is very difficult to achieve. I basically believe the most important thing for the powers that be is that people believe that real people died. Members of the public were killed at random. Because, you know, if it then is revealed that nobody actually dies in these incidents, in these propaganda stories, okay, then all of a sudden the focus falls on the government, you know, and why are they doing this? Are they trying to create two or three different groups in society and play them off against each other and, you know, try to encourage different groups to attack each other? It's very important to keep on asking these questions. I think, you know, another example of COINTELPRO may be MKUltra, because, you know, in popular culture, we're told that MKUltra is the government brainwashing Manchurian candidates, or think there's something along those lines. You know, but you see, this still keeps alive the idea that real people from the general public die in these incidents. So whatever they do, and I've noticed this with Alex Jones and a lot of other researchers as well, whatever they do, they will never tell you that nobody actually dies in these propaganda stories. It seems to be the one thing that they will skirt over. They may say, the Israeli Mossad or somebody like this actually carried out the killings. But this is nonsense. I personally believe Mossad are just photographers and designers. I don't believe most of what they do is related to violence. I reckon that's a completely different issue. So there's a lot of derailing going on there. You know, I think the main point, I believe, is that anything we hear about through mass media is something that the government is happy for us to know about. If you put any real sort of, you know, genuine nuggets of truth out there, then you may find that, you know, hilariously and quite disturbingly, actually, you know, maybe only a few thousand people from around the world will ever look at it. You know, when you look at the web stats, you know, and this could be for things that are fairly easy to find using the key search words in the search engines. You know, people just don't necessarily have the desire for truth in the way that you might expect them to. It's people don't really seem interested, and, you know, I think this is something that our supposed leaders or controllers take advantage of. They know that, you know, not many people are really sort of interested in getting to grips with the nuts and bolts of how the world works.
Well, I agree with you wholeheartedly, and I think you're right. I'm beginning to understand with this Sandy Hook thing that what what they want us to know is what we get. And if we get it, and people think they're so smart and talking about, they've done it in order to get rid of, to enact new gun laws. Well, that's what they want us to think it is, and that's what they want us to be talking about. And because that's not going to change anything very much, while the real issues are something else altogether. Would you say? I mean, I'm not putting that as well as you do, but...
Yeah, well, I mean, it's very difficult to know exactly what they're planning for us. I mean, it could well be that whichever government agency or government groups or royal societies, whether it's the United Nations maybe or some other group that we don't know about, that they've simply decided that there are limits to growth. I mean, you may have heard of the Club of Rome talking about limits to growth and the publication by that name. And that people in Western countries will not accept a greatly reduced standard of living, but it's a nasty job that has to be done, or something along those lines. And so this is all really to preempt the possibility of the working class and the middle class taking up arms against their leaders. I think it's something more along those lines. I'm not really into the this idea that the governments of the world want mass depopulation or anything like that. You know, that could be another red herring. It is very difficult to really guess what this is all really about. That's just how I see it. I mean, who knows what the real motivations are, but certainly fear is something that these groups thrive on, because obviously from our point of view, it's a very powerful subject. It's a very disturbing subject. And, even the people who are aware, they will panic. They will go out and buy more guns and buy more ammunition and so on. So it still has the effect of just making all of these different groups, ultra paranoid of each other. So, whichever way you look at it, it's having the desired impact on the population.
Okay, well, let's get back to the specifics of Sandy Hook from the big picture, which was really very interesting, but we can get kind of lost in that, I suppose. The big question I think that comes to people, and that Don may be saying, and that people say to me, is that, well, how could they pretend that all those kids were dead, and what have they done with them, and how do they carry this off? What do they do with all these people, and how can all these people be either fooled or be in on it? So Don, you want to add anything right there about that?
Well, it seems pretty incredible that they could pull off a hoax like that, but no less incredible than the murder of the President of the United States or the election to the office of the presidency, a man whose birth certificate is a forgery. So when you talk about creating a virtual reality in these virtual events, I've studied the history of Barack Obama a great deal, read both of his books, fact-checked him, and I think a lot of I think this man is a virtual man. I think his past has been created. I don't believe he was born in Africa, but I think probably a substantial amount of his personal background is fabricated and written by people in the news media or people in the intelligence office, because his birth certificate is an obvious fraud and a forgery.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a great deal of what Martin says. I don't agree with him in one respect, that these people have any qualms about depopulation. They certainly didn't have any qualms about depopulating Russia or China. One of the trademarks of communist countries is they slaughter their own populations. And whether they just want to lower our standard of living or actually kill us, I mean, the result is substantially the same. Greatly diminished freedom and greatly diminished quality of life. I think Sandy Hook was it was staged. It was done for some reason. Whether there were multiple shooters who went in there and took out, 29 real people, or whether it is simply a contrived, sophisticated high theater, as it may very well be, the obvious intention was to further the agenda of gun control. The obvious agenda is to disarm the civilian population so we can be dispossessed at the pleasure of the ruling classes.
Okay, well, let me just interrupt here and let's get back to how can they do this? How do they pull off, if it is, and I think you were saying it might be just an elaborate, creation, and not what they say it is. How do they deal with all those kids and families? Or, you know, I could see, I at one time thought, well, they created a classroom that didn't exist and nobody, knew those kids were there and those couple that are talked about are part of acting families and they, you know, come on in like the Robbie, what's his last name guy. And so, well, how would you explain that then, Michael? I mean, Martin, because I'm glad you're here because you've got to have an explanation for that I don't have.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, from my point of view, if nobody died, then remember the alphabet agencies are able to control the storyline and the timing of the story. And if nobody is killed, then technically no laws have been broken. So the government has basically told you a story. They've told you a very clever lie. And that's not really illegal. Because, you know, remember, we've never actually signed a contract with CNN or ABC News or Fox News that they have to tell us the truth about anything. They're under no contractual obligation to do that. We also have to recognize as well that in all Western countries, you know, the coroners, the medical examiners, psychiatrists, executive management of the ambulance service and so on, all of these key individuals in the running of the government and, you know, that aspect of running a country's affairs, they will work or are part of, you know, the security structure, especially in a NATO member state. Remember that they run the ambulance service. In the UK, we've got something called St. John Ambulance, and they were involved in the Hungerford massacre, ZIOP. You will remember the hospital in Newtown actually has connections to Yale University. Yale University is actually a well-known hotbed for what Scottish Rite Freemasonry, which has a lot of influences in the area and in the state as a whole. In fact, the actual director of that hospital he's quite friendly with an extremely wealthy philanthropist in the local area. I think it's a Greek American. I need to find his name. I've forgotten it. Who himself is actually very close to Hillary and Bill Clinton. And he was actually somebody who worked for the National Semiconductor Corporation for 20 or 30 years and got to quite a high level in that organization. So, as I say, you know, if you're prepared to spend some time really sort of digging away at the background of the key individuals who would need to be involved, if that hypothesis was correct, then you can kind of bring together the different strands and see how it was possible. Now, certainly, I mean, if you, as an independent or third party, wanted to do a DNA test of the victims, how would you go about doing that? How would you go about exhuming the bodies? And who exactly would you be testing against? You know, you have to find the families, get them to agree to that. Can you get people to agree to it? You know, it simply is not going to happen. I'll tell you right now, nobody will answer the phone calls. Nobody will answer the emails. You will hit a brick wall if you try to go about proving this to yourself. That's always the way. You know, if you take it upon yourself as an individual to prove that these things really happened, you won't be able to do it. You know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would think you would be able to, through public record search, to be able to find birth certificates and death certificates on all the victims.
Yeah, are there death certificates? Is anybody going to look for the death certificates?
Well, I'm sure that will happen. But, you know, remember, again, that's the government. You know, the government has the ability to falsify data trails and previous or personal records on citizens. So this is all, every aspect is falsifiable by government agencies. So this is what I'm saying. Every step of the way, you're trusting a government figure. You know, it's all covered, if you see what I mean.
Well, this gets so to the size that we can't trust anybody, and that's always a little scary to get into, because then you might as well give up, because there's, you know, even if you figure it out, you're not going to get anywhere with it. You're talking about like absolute control over everything and no way out of it.
I'm not really sure about that. So, I mean, it's as we say, it's still psychological operations. And, you know, I mean, a lot of people don't even watch television anymore. You know, a lot of people are just watching video game, playing video games and don't even know about these news events when they happen. So it's still kind of, I don't think it's something that we should freak out about. I think, you know, I think we should learn to disregard the mass media. But we shouldn't be too disturbed by it. You know, I mean, it's a very heavy subject and it's easy to get very upset about it. But it's still, when you really look at it, you know, does it really work? You know, it's I'm not sure that I'm sure these people would like to think that they're really clever, but it's debatable as to how effective it really is. I mean, can the USA ever really be disarmed? You know, I don't think it can be. I mean, you know, it's impossible to disarm the USA completely. You know, maybe a few more cities, you know, key cities like Denver could have gun control tightened up a bit. But I don't think you'll ever really control the countryside.
Well, how did they disarm Britain and England, where you are? I mean, they pretty much have, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. But, I mean, bear in mind, we still have a very different system. I mean, in the UK, the countryside is dominated by the big landowners and the aristocracy and so on. Whereas in the USA, if you want to get out of the cities and have a simple life out in the wilderness, you can still do that. And there's a lot of cheap land and you can just do whatever the hell you want, really. You know, so now the UK isn't really like that. We're much more urbanized, you know, almost mm-hmm. everybody lives in the town or lives in the suburbs or in city centers. Mm-hmm. So it's a slightly different kind of dynamic. But, you know, I mean, as you say, I mean, it is very heavy. But, I mean, I'm satisfied that, you know, this is how it's done.
Well, what would you say? Let me get one thing out here that I think people would want to know. I sure do. How do you explain this Robbie Parker? Who is he?
I would just argue that he's somebody who's actually worked for a government agency or possibly an actor who was hired to carry out the role. Possibly somebody from the other side of the country. I doubt that that's his real name. He's been given a pseudonym or, you know, different operating name for the story.
And those are not his kids, or is he married to that woman and those are his children or not? I know you don't know this for sure, but I mean,
nobody can say 100%. But I would personally, my personal feeling, more instinct, would be that the wife may also be an actress who posed for the photographs, or she may be not a real person. And the same for the children. They're either actors used for the operation or fabricated images. There's nobody really there, you know? So, I mean, you should never really underestimate what they're capable of doing now with
Well, then what about the rest of the children in that classroom? Were they... you know, they just invented people.
I think it's possible for the government. Yeah, I think it's possible for the government to create a fake data trail to support the existence of fictional characters, and who will deny it? You know, I mean, you can't really prove it definitively one way or the other, but we know they can do it. They can falsify documents and birth and death records. They can do all of these things. And we know that they can create images, digital paintings that look like real photographs of real people when there's simply nobody there. You know, bring it all together and you can see that they've got a very powerful propaganda machine at work there. You know, that's very convincing.
Well, what about the other people in that town, specifically the people who, that is a real school, and there's kids who attend that school? I guess, and you know, there's people that are closer to it, not just us sitting here watching it on TV, but you know, they're in the town. How do you think that worked with them?
Well, you know, this is something I haven't really been able to work out, and you know, that's just the one thing I'm really unsure about. Mm-hmm. Certainly, I mean, let me give you a few examples, though. I mean, you know, when we actually look into the background of, you know, Anders Breivik in Norway, you know, the supposed attacker in Oslo, you know, a couple of years ago, 18 months ago or so. And this guy did not go to university, and he lived with his mother until the age of 32. Okay, so straight away, you know, you have to kind of go back to his primary school to try and work out, you know, okay, let's try and find who some of his friends may have been, you know, who he went to school with. So you have to go all the way back to when he was at primary school at the age of, you know, 6 or 7. And then you would find that, okay, you do a bit of research into the school, and this is actually a very exclusive primary school that the Norwegian royal family and all the diplomats and the senior military and so on actually send their children to. And they have class sizes of 5 or 6 to a class. So, you know, if you actually wanted to find people in his year at school, you'd probably find they maybe were working abroad as a diplomat or something like that, or maybe they were very high up in the police or in the media, for example. There's only sort of 4 or 5 of them that you can track down, and they're still not really particularly trustworthy individuals. So, you know, when you actually look at it, you really narrow it down. It's difficult to actually, you know, to track these people. And, you know, I mean, this is just, you know, it's a very good point, Carolyn. And that is just the one critical point that I haven't really been able to explain to anybody. And you know, I'm trying to work out how we can get through that and see how that aspect of these hoaxes is actually covered.
See, a lot of these people may have seen it on TV, and that's it, just like the rest of us. I mean, you know, I live in close to a town of under 30,000 people. And I don't know anything that, you know, it's not a place where you know everybody. I don't know everybody. There's people who know more people than I do because I've kind of, you know, dropped out of it all. But you know, a lot of things could be going on that I would, because I might not be typical.
Yeah.
You know. See, but you know, I think I don't know. Could that be a media thing at that school, and nobody was none of these people were really involved in it, but they believe what they're told? And what about these teachers who supposedly were killed? Where did they go, and where are these kids?
Well, you know, this is it. I mean, my contention is that they weren't real people. You know, I really believe.
Oh,
that.
Okay, yeah. So that goes back to that. They invented a classroom of kids that didn't really exist.
Right, exactly, yep, mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, as you say, I mean, you know, the question then is this a real school? Is it a military school, or does the school have military connections? Was a training exercise carried out at the school in an empty classroom? And, you know, the people in the next classroom actually still believe the official story that we've heard about in the media? Or, I mean, is it actually a fake school, and, you know, nobody actually really goes to that school? I mean, you know, obviously it sort of brings up all of these issues, and I don't know exactly how they pull off that particular fraud, if you see what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, Don, do you have what do you think of this so far? What kind of objections would you raise to it?
Well, I have one question about Hungerford. Is that the same village that is near where the Special Air Services are headquartered?
No, it's actually a different part of the country to that. But yeah, I mean, that's quite far away. But I mean, the victims, or the alleged victims, were taken to an area near Swindon, which is it's an area that has long-standing Royal Air Force and Army connections, including 2 military hospitals. So, you know, this is basically, you know, something else that sort of sheds more light on what exactly may have gone on. I mean, I agree with you, Carolyn. I mean, just picking up on something you said a second ago, I have no doubt that an Army exercise of some kind is carried out at that location. And maybe somebody fires shots into the air, and it could well be that people down the road, civilians down the road, hear the gunshots. They then go home in the evening and watch the news, and they kind of put 2 and 2 together and get to 5, because, you know, they heard the gunshots. They go home and then see what happened in the news, and they so they kind of assume that you know, it all happened in the way that we're told it did, you know, because from their point of view, it all comes together, you know, perfectly, you know, it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right, right. Yeah, yeah. We put things together. Well, it's amazing what we do in our mind with very little, how we try to make sense of things with a tiny amount of information. Go ahead, Don.
Yeah, I'm reminded of the very famous incident that occurred during World War II, which was the object of a movie, The Man Who Never Was, where British intelligence took a cadaver, a dead body, and they created a false background and identity, and then they put papers on there that I guess that would suggest an invasion would come at a certain location so that German forces would be diverted away from the real location that they intended to invade. It was the object of a movie, and David Irving talked about it in some of his lectures. So the idea of creating people identities out of thin air is certainly one that is well grounded in the history of the 20th century, and that was before you had the extraordinary technology that is available today.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, looking back through history, it wouldn't surprise me if a lot of these notorious characters like Carlos the Jackal or Baader and Meinhof and so on, all these people who we were told were they not even real people? Were they fictional characters? You know, it's you cannot definitively prove it one way or the other.
Okay, we've got 30 seconds left before our break. We'll be taking a 5-minute break, and then we'll be back with this very fascinating program. I would like to get into, just for my own interest, some of these child witnesses and what some of the kids said and what was on Dr. Oz's program, which is the general range of what you find people talking about on the internet, see how that fits into this whole theme that we've got going. So, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back, so stay with us. Thank you. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn Yeager, and I am Carolyn, and I have with me two wonderful guests, Don from California and Martin from England. We are talking about the Sandy Hook so-called alleged massacre and have had some real interesting stuff come out about it. And we're going to continue now. I'm going to try to move it to a little bit more of the mundane parts of it just to get this in and then see where we go from there. But, there's some things that are commonly out there are that the Victoria Soto RIP, rest in peace, Facebook page that was posted 4 days before she was supposedly killed in this massacre. That's one thing. I've read that there's two of the murdered students, Benjamin Wheeler, who was six, and then this Emily Parker, who we've been talking about, her family, the Robbie Parker family. Benjamin Wheeler, he says both parents are entertainers, and they didn't move to Newtown until April of 2012. And Emily Parker and her family moved there 7 months before this happened in December. So, again, they just moved there in the year 2012. Of course, I think that this Parker family can't possibly be real. But then there was this Dr. Oz interview with a little third grader named Louie. And I think what he said, and I could go through it, but some, you might want to do it yourself or whatever. Louie was supposed to say what he remembered from that day. And he was definitely programmed. I mean, he had definitely practiced what he was supposed to say because Dr. Oz said to him, here's Louie, a third grader from the school, and Louie asked me to ask him what he remembered from that day. So the question was all set up, and it supposedly came from Louis. And he said, Louis, what do you remember from that day? So Louis starts telling him, and then he can't go on. He forgets what he's, So Dr. Oz says, oh, take your time. There's no hurry. And then he changes the subject. He says, well, let me ask you, what would you say to your teachers, about Friday? What would you say to your teachers? And Louis says, well, I don't know what it's like, and he couldn't go on. And Dr. Oz says, you appreciate your teachers? And Louis says, oh, yeah, I appreciate my teachers, and he takes a deep breath. Then his mother in the background, or some female, says, tries to help him out. And then he repeats what she says to him, thank me for helping. Always says, thank them for helping me a lot of times, a lot of stuff, so... and then Dr. Oz realized this was hopeless, so he says, that's fine, that's perfect, thank you, stop. And he goes on and talks to the adults, the two women that were there. This was just an example of how rehearsed this was and how these kids sometimes do all right and sometimes they don't. Any comment on that?
Yeah, I have a comment. I noticed in the coverage immediately following the event that all of the people who were interviewed, they only heard gunfire in the distance, and they talked about how they hid. There was not a single eyewitness, either a child or an adult. And the adult mm-hmm. survivor who was shot in the hand and the foot, to my knowledge, has never been on television and never really interviewed. There was one brief story about her a few days after the event, and she sort of disappeared into the woodwork in a manner of
speaking. That's right. I read about her just recently, and she had these wounds in, external parts of her body, so she wasn't mortally, ill or, more critical condition or anything, and yet you don't hear anything from her, and I suppose we won't. I mean, this is just the way they do it, and people, the general run of the people, well, if the journalists don't push these questions, nobody's going to.
Well, it was very interesting. Somebody pointed out that the Sandy Hook shooter supposedly wore a mask. And the Aurora, Colorado shooter had a gas mask, and that would make it very difficult to identify the actual shooter if mm-hmm. any photographs later surfaced. So,
but they don't, just like you say, there's no surveillance video. And just like with 9/11 and that gas station across the street from the Pentagon and all that surveillance around the Pentagon, nothing from there. You know, and you know that they destroyed it. I mean, they took it and absconded with it.
The local liquor store has a surveillance camera, but the Pentagon does not. I thought that was pretty strange.
Yeah. You know. Well, they do have it, but they didn't catch anything. Well, so and then this Louis said in the beginning when he was asked what he remembered, he said, "I remember that a lot of policemen were in the school." Well, I remember when we were having a drill, we were hiding under and then he goes, and then that's when Dr. Oz says, "Take your time, there's no hurry." So now here, you know, you have Dr. Oz, who I wouldn't give any credence to anyway, participating in this whole charade. But this kid couldn't remember what he was supposed to say, but he remembered that they were having a drill when they were hiding under their desk. So I don't think he could. And then, as you said, two kids said, where do I have that to get it just right? None of these kids who were interviewed were traumatized. The ones that we saw on TV, there was a little boy that said quite a bit in a TV interview, and a little girl with no front teeth. And she was smiling away, you know, and the little boy was anxious to say what he had to say. And they said things like they thought that they heard a loud noise, that they thought the custodian had dropped some boxes and was knocking things over. And then another one said they thought that somebody had kicked a door in. Now, where do they get these ideas? This is kid thinking. And yet there were supposed to be over 100 rounds. The person who called 9/11 said there were 100 rounds of machine gun fire or something. And the person on the other end said 100 rounds. They said, yes, at least 100 rounds, you know. And they were going on about, I don't know who that person was who called into 9/11 either. The whole thing just seems to be an invention. You want to do you have anything more to say about that, Martin?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, remember, an independent journalist or researcher would never be allowed to give their thoughts on television, live television. You know, you just have the same characters every time with these incidents. You know, you get Cynthia McFadden, is it, or Diane Sawyer of ABC News?
I was going to mention. I'll just throw that in here right now that I did see. And I have it written down here, a special with Diane Sawyer and his male sidekick, who I didn't know who he was. They're on ABC News, and I think it must have been on that very night of December 14th. I saw this on YouTube, I guess. They were on a show. Maybe they were there for like a half hour, at least 15 minutes, in the snow, the snowy night, you know, talking about it. And not giving you any information at all, just looking all wet-eyed and, you know, oh, and sad, and oh, you know, not convincing at all. And not a tear ever came down from their eyes, but their eyes always looked wet. So they must put something in the eyes, right?
Yeah, I mean, they just look very cold and unmoved by the whole affair. I mean, you've also got the likes of, what is it, Rick Leventhal at the Fox News, who always seems to pop up with these very dubious news stories. You know, he's always there. You know, it's the same characters every time. And,
I have to break in just a second here. We have a caller. I've got to get rid of this thing from you, Don. Okay, we have a caller who's ringing, and I'm going to take the call because I don't know how long he'll keep ringing, and then we'll see what he has to say and continue if I can do this. No, I'm good. See? Oh, no, he's gone. He gave up, I guess. Okay. Well, he might call back again. This gets a little tricky. Okay, so continue, Martin.
This is just about coming to the end of that. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's very difficult.
Okay,
for an
independent
voice,
how about you, Don? You know? Don, what about what I was saying about those kids and Diane Sawyer and all that? I mean, you know, there's no reality to any of this.
Well, one of the things that has struck me about the Sandy Hook coverage is how little substantive coverage there really is, how few facts, and the few facts that do come out are later contradicted by other information. And you know, the gun was in the car. No, he had the gun in the classroom. He used to kill all these people. There are discrepancies about the number of shots fired. I saw a very interesting thing on YouTube last night where they showed an aerial shot apparently taken by a helicopter that shows fire engines and ambulances parked next to the school, but they are completely blocked in by about 100 cars, purportedly, I guess, from parents who showed
up.
Yeah,
I saw that.
Yeah, I think it would be rather strange that the fire engines and the ambulances that are supposed to transport injured, wounded people to the hospital are all blocked in by bystanders' cars. I can't imagine the police would allow that to happen.
Mm-hmm. But so, they showed the actual video film. But again, as you were saying earlier, you have to be careful about some of these things on YouTube to know just, you know, what they're showing you. Maybe they do it so fast, and it's off of a screen, so it's kind of hard to see. But maybe they had the date there and everything.
But you're talking about the mainstream coverage of it and the children being interviewed and the witnesses, you know, the parents who are laughing and smirking, and then the camera comes on them, and suddenly they're very somber and very tearful. I'm stunned by how little real substantive information is coming out of the coverage. I mean, the children all said, yeah, I hid under my desk and I heard gunshots from another part of the building.
They I've never heard a kid say he heard a gunshot. Unless the reporter maybe says, did you hear gunshots? Oh, yeah.
No, I've heard kids say they heard gunshots in other parts of the building, but... It's all very contrived. It seems to me it's like even Winston Churchill hired an actor to deliver some of his speeches during World War II, and you get a sense that this fake reality was really born during that era, and with the technology and the new science that they have, they're able to embellish upon it, and the real reality for us is what we see on television, not what necessarily goes on outside the room.
Well, yes, and what about what Martin said about the same people? That impresses me, too. There's a few kids that we see. Okay, here's this caller again. Let me see if I can get him before I get the right one. Well, there's two of them. Gee. I can only take one at a time. Let's see if he comes on. Hello, I hear something.
Hey, Carolyn.
Yeah?
This is Ray.
Ray Goodwin?
You got it.
Okay, well, hi, Ray.
Hey, how you doing, gal? I'm enjoying the show.
Okay, well, have you got something to contribute to it or a question to ask? Because there's another caller here, but he's still ringing, but he has to wait because I can't take two at a time.
Okay.
I'm not that swift.
Yeah, I'm just going to, just a couple of comments or whatever.
Okay. Go ahead.
Oh, okay.
You need to get off the. You need to turn down your sound because there's a delay.
Okay, let me see here.
We were talking about the fact that it's the same people, and I've seen just, you know, there's a couple of kids who they bring on. There's this Dr. Oz show, which I couldn't actually find the video of it. I just listened to it. And then there's these few parents who they've had on, and that's it. And you see them again and again. There's not a large crowd. What do you say about that, Martin? That's a little bit. Martin, Hello? Are you still there?
Well, this is Ray, and I'm still here.
Well, Martin, are you still here? Well, Martin is still shown to be on the line, but I hope we didn't lose him because of the phone call.
You need to click
no,
me off.
No, 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 go ahead, Ray.
No, I'm still here.
Oh,
I'm
he's still here. Yeah. Okay. Ray, go ahead now with what you wanted to say.
Well, I think one of the characteristics of this particular incident, the Sandy Hook, is that it's the kind of thing that people would be more afraid to express any doubt about. How can you do that? You know, say anything.
Yeah, right.
Because
of the kids.
Yeah, and that in itself is an intimidation thing. And I think a while ago when y'all were talking about is this matter all about really gun control, and certainly I think that's part of it, but I also believe that it's they're testing their toes in the water. How successful is this deception, you know, that we're practicing, and see how many of the sheep are still following the
We said that in the first hour, but it's good to reinforce that because I think that's real important. That's my impression.
And then I just wanted to say a word of thanks to Gunter Deckard, and you know, for what he's undergoing now, and you know, just following in the line of Manfred Rader and Frederick Tobin and Ernst Zundel and all the folks that you mentioned, and these kind of guys put their money where their mouth is, and they stick by their convictions, and I just want to say thank you. I'm enjoying the show, and I'll let you get back to Don and Martin.
Okay, thanks a lot for that, for those good sentiments, Raymond.
Okay.
And we'll talk to you later. Thank you. Bye bye.
Uh-huh. Bye bye.
Well, let's see. I don't know. We've got two more calls ringing. I'm going to see if I can. I'm going to see if I can take this one without throwing everything off kilter. This guy's been waiting, so I guess he really wants to come on. Huh. 1700. Hi, caller. Hi, caller. Are you there? Well, he's supposed to be on the line. Until we're waiting for him to say something, let's continue with the program. So, Martin, you haven't said anything for a while.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah. Would you have anything to add to from the...
Well, yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I think more than anything, the government just wants people with contrarian views to just kind of shut up. You know, they're trying to promote self-policing because, you know, in many of these PSYOPs or MISO operations, as they're now called, military information support, they basically portray these characters. Well, there's always something unusual about them. They either smoke cannabis or... they're so eccentric mathematicians like the Unabomber, you know, or they're just bizarre and unorthodox in some way or other. Maybe they have autism or Asperger's syndrome or, you know, something like this. And I think maybe the government, these government agencies, the alphabet agencies, I think maybe they're aware that a lot of people who really ask questions about the world may be quite unusual and off-the-wall characters out there because they've had a reason to look at the world differently. So they're kind of trying to sort of stereotype anybody who speaks out about these sorts of issues as maybe somebody that you know, is a bit dangerous or possibly a bit unhinged, you know. So as the previous caller said, you know, the general idea, I think, is to shame people into, you know, not talking about it, you know. If you, you know, suggest the whole thing was made up, you know, people just, you know, the crowd, you know, the mass man will just they've been programmed to view you as a threat or something just to be on your guard about. So, you know, this is it. They just want people to keep their head down, you know, go to work in the morning, come back and watch some, you know, rubbish television in the night.
Yeah, right. Let me interrupt because I just brought on another caller and let's see if he's on the line here. Are you there, caller?
I'm here, Carolyn.
Okay, you got on finally.
I finally got through.
Okay, who
is
it? Your voice is familiar, but I'm not sure. Want to give us your name, please?
Yeah, this is Jim, and I'm in the big state of Texas.
Okay, y'all. Jim. All right. Well, hey. what do you want to ask our guests here?
Well, I wonder if either one of you know of a character named Douglas Dietrich. Who claims he was a military historian at the Presidio, and he was charged with document destruction, and he copied or wrote down notes from a lot of these documents, and he has some amazing stories to tell, and I just don't know if they're true or not.
I've never heard of him.
Yeah, he's been interviewed on Rants and several other places, coast to coast.
Oh, and he's got a lot of conspiratorial.
Yeah, a lot of it.
That's what you mean. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of these people who I think are phony. I don't think that about Martin so far at all. Martin.
Yeah.
but you know, you can get carried away with this stuff, and it depends on where they take it. So I'd be interested to know what does he say about Sandy Hook, this Dietrich guy?
Well, I've looked around on his website, and I don't see that he mentions anything about it yet. But one thing that's funny about that is what happened in Scotland that got all the guns in England banned, you know, the attack on the school children in Dunblane, right?
Mm-hmm.
What happened in in Port Arthur, Australia? Same thing.
Well, what do you think? Yeah. What do you think about the idea that this was such a total hoax that nobody was actually killed, or these children aren't real, and this is just a media creation?
Yeah, well, if you watch those YouTube videos of the supposed medical examiner, he seems to be a total idiot.
Well, you know, there's one, I'm glad you brought that up, because there's one YouTube with that medical examiner, and that's the first one I saw. It's an edited one where they keep replaying and making him look stupid. Well, finally, I was reading some forum. Actually, it was the real, I came upon the Ron Paul group forum. And
they had for Liberty?
Good, yeah, they had some good stuff there. I don't know if it was that one or a different one, but somebody said, hey, there's a video of that total press conference with that coroner, and he doesn't look nearly as bad in it. He looks pretty good. So, he gave the link, so I watched it, and he's still kind of goofy, but not nearly like in that one. So you have to watch these videos that are edited, and they just take parts
of
people and do that, and they can. So there you go. I mean, this is why this investigating things like this gets a bad name, because you have people doing stuff like that. So this coroner seemed to be maybe like a lot of coroners, because people have pointed out that when you have the job of a coroner and you're looking at dealing with dead bodies all day long, you might be a little...
Yeah, that might make you a little jaded.
Yeah, well, what else?
Well, there was some reports I read, too, said that the first responders, the medical people, weren't allowed inside the school. They had to wait across the street at a fire station.
Well, I think that's probably true. Nobody was in there. Nobody saw that.
Yeah.
This coroner said that he was in at the crime scene. So if he's from what he's saying, and if this is really such a total hoax, then he's in on it too, or he's doing what they're told.
He'd have to be. Yeah.
But now that brings another question that I'd like to ask our guests, especially Martin. The objection that people have to what he's saying is that how can you get all these people? And so maybe this coroner, is he also an invented painting? What do you say, Martin?
No, I mean, I have no idea about that specific coroner. But, you know, remember, the coroners play a very important role for the government. And it's not too much of a stretch to imagine that they are sort of these characters could be high-level Freemasons, or they could work for the security services at least part of the time. This is actually part of the security apparatus, in a sense, because, you know, their involvement would be necessary in these propaganda operations, you know. So we're not saying that you can't trust anybody, because when you really look at it, you could pull off a hoax like this with, I'd say, maybe 30-40 people in the inner circle in key positions. You know, you don't need thousands of people involved in it. You know, it can be done with a relatively small group of people, you know, if that hypothesis is correct.
Well, you know, what occurs to me now is that if nobody really died, a person like this coroner would be brought into it and say, well, we're doing this to, you know, bring about gun control. We have a good reason for it. And if, like you say, they might be Freemasons or high level this or that, and they value their job, and he's the head guy, so even though he seems very, very weird, he could easily lose his job in a proper society, I suppose. But he keeps his job.
Am I still on, Carolyn?
Yeah, you're still on. Just stay on.
Yeah, remember.
Well, let me just finish this, and then you.
Okay.
So therefore, you know, you could get some people to go along with this play acting. Because they're just doing something for a good purpose, and they're not really hurting anybody, right? I mean, they could believe that.
Supposedly.
It's not like people are being asked to lie about the murder of 20 children and six adults or whatever, teachers. It's not like they're doing that if this never happened. It's like they're just being asked to lie about something happening that didn't really happen. So that would be easier to get people on board, I would think. Because people people generally say, oh, what kind of an inhuman monster would do such a thing and then, you know, support it or not tell the truth about it or whatever, would be involved. Who would do that with these little children? Well, because it never really happened. Okay, go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, well, you remember the infamous coroner, Fahmy Malik of Arkansas, back in the good old Clinton days.
Kind of vaguely.
Who fabricated a lot of autopsy results on people that, you know, that he said committed suicide, and they'd been shot and had their heads cut off, and, you know, it's ridiculous.
Okay, and so who was he working for? Was he working for the Clintons, or was he working for against?
Well, that's a question, I guess. I mean, nominally, he was working for the state of Arkansas, right?
Okay, right. All right, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what do you say to that, Don or Martin?
Yeah, well, I don't know much about that particular incident, but I mean, you know, what you were saying a second ago about, you know, some of these key individuals believing they're doing the right thing. Well, you know about Agenda 21 and the sustainability agenda, don't you? So, you know, very often people will talk about, you know, Portland in Oregon. It's like a sort of European-style American city. You know, it's the future. It's all,
yeah, Portland,
it's all well connected. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. They've got, you know, cycle lanes everywhere, and it's all much more civilized than New York City and Los Angeles and all the rest of it. Well, you know, this is a similar thing. You can kind of sell those sorts of ideas and policies by taking some quite, you know, nice, fluffy, you know, on the face of it, examples, you know, to sell it to the people. You know, this is a more maybe they have been convinced that the USA needs to become a kind of European style social democracy, and that, you know, that's for the best. You know, it's for the best to disarm the population, and, you know, it's better if we all sort of live in apartment blocks and, you know, travel to work on the train, and, you know, it's less polluting and all of this rubbish. They may have been kind of brainwashed along those sorts of lines. So I'm not necessarily saying that, you know, there may be people who've kind of, they've got trapped into a certain type of corruption, which they don't necessarily themselves as individuals always believe that, you know, they're sort of what they're doing is wrong. They may genuinely believe that they're doing the right thing, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. I think that would be an explanation. What are you feeling, Don, about these explanations? Do they sound credible to you?
Well, obviously the control of the medical records is very important. We saw this in the Kennedy assassination, and some gentleman mentioned somebody in Arkansas who was a crooked coroner. Those kinds of things are known to have occurred. But, I think that the rulers of this country, the rulers of the world, have tremendous control over the media, and the idea that they would fabricate events in order that they would create an alternate reality and pass it off as a real reality, I think is a more and more credible premise. I think it's highly credible.
Okay, and you know, I just thought that I not normally wouldn't accept such a thing so quickly, and but I just thought it seemed far more credible than what they're telling us, you know, which is not credible at all, mainly because as it's been said, nobody ever saw that crime scene.
Well, the thing that
nobody's going to, and they don't have any photographs of it either.
Yeah, we haven't seen any photographs.
Nope.
We haven't seen any photographs of the door that he supposedly shot his way through. You see, here's the thing, and the thing that hit me immediately was the fatality rate, almost 100%. With a rifle, it's really not that powerful. With some kid who's got a psychiatric condition that is characterized by extreme depression and introversion and introspection. So this kid comes out of his basement because he's afraid of reality, and then suddenly he becomes a, you know, a stormtrooper, shoots his way into
Rambo.
And he's
all
able
of a sudden
to
he's Rambo.
People dead.
Yeah.
You know, I'm familiar with that cartridge. It's hard to get 26 out of 27 dead on jackrabbits and ground squirrels.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, the idea that he killed 96% of these people is not a credible thing. It is statistically insignificant with all the other mass shootings, most of which produced more wounded than dead.
Yeah, we can talk about this shooter. I was wanting to get us to that point. What's his first name? Adam. Adam. Yeah, and that he suddenly, like you said, you know, is this little weak kid, and then he suddenly becomes Rambo and can do all this. Why, you know, they must really be testing just how much we will swallow, because that is too much to swallow.
Well, my initial theory is that there were multiple shooters, and that's one of the reasons. Initially, there were no eyewitnesses, because and that was before this one wounded woman came out. We heard about her, and then she's disappeared off into the Netherland. But if you've got that, you know, almost a 100% fatality rate, that indicates to me multiple shooters, or perhaps, as Martin suggests, it's a fictitious event, completely fictitious event.
Well, I think it's more likely that it's a fictitious event. Do you want to continue?
I'm open-minded on it. I've got to see a little more evidence before I come down squarely on the side of a fictitious event, but I'm open to considering it.
Good. Well, Martin, did you want to add? Our caller dropped off, so Jim dropped off. So if anybody wants to call in, they're welcome to do so. We don't have any caller on the line now. Yes, Martin.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to sort of check out my research on other incidents like this, then you can find it under the username Euphoria on the cluesforum.info site. So everything on Hungerford and Jokola and Kauhajoki and in Finland it is on there, and quite a few other stories as well. So it's a good site, and I recommend checking that out. I don't necessarily agree with everything on there, but there are some good findings.
What do you say about the event in, you said Finland, I'm thinking about Norway. Breivik, what do you think is the true story about Breivik?
Well, I think earlier on, Gladio was mentioned, and I really believe that most of what NATO does, and certainly the NATO Partnership for Peace framework, is fake news stories, bogus news stories, and I reckon that it's a full-time operation. Somebody somewhere, I think the European Commission has a role in this as well. I believe that they do this all the time. I believe Norway was another example of a fabricated news story using very similar techniques to Newtown in Connecticut. You know, that ZIOP, or what we feel could be a ZIOP. And also, I mean, the incidents in Finland and possibly the suicide bomber attack in Stockholm as well, which was very suspect. You know, just one lone attacker who managed to sort of damage a car slightly. We never really heard that much about it. You know, nobody was killed or injured. Apparently he was very close to an extremely busy shopping area, and he only managed to kind of dent the side of a car. You know, that's all he really managed to pull off. You know, so I think they do these things all the time. I really, really do. And it does sound a bit far out to people who haven't really had the time to look into it, perhaps, you know. Mm-hmm. But, it's not uncommon.
Okay. I've got a list here we've probably covered just about all of it, that, you know, there's no evidence has been presented. No one saw anything. All witnesses were killed. You know, in this case, you were talking about the high death rate, Don, and it's like they didn't want to leave any witnesses to this available, you know, so nobody actually saw what happened who can say that they saw.
Well, there was another thing that struck me about some of the original coverage. There was statements about how he went into a classroom and he had this discussion with the teacher, and the teacher tried to there was a reference to a conversation that he had with the teacher and actions that occurred. Then it came out later everybody in the whole classroom, including the shooter, was dead. So how do they know what happened if everybody who participated and witnessed this conversation and these events are all dead? I mean, you're a lawyer, you look at stuff like that, mm-hmm. because you have to investigate and you have to, at some point in time, present evidence. Well, how if everybody involved in a single room is dead, how do you know what happened? And there's no video, there's no tape recording.
No, and they say there's this one girl who's in the hospital. Was she in that? She was from that room.
No, the one witness, the one person who survived, she was with the principal and an assistant.
Oh yeah, I
principal.
Know her, but I thought that there was
supposedly
a child.
Walking. Well, there's
I thought
a child.
There was a child.
Okay, there's a six-year-old, an unnamed six-year-old, who has since filed a lawsuit, a claim against the state of Connecticut.
Oh yeah, I read about
the school
that.
District or somebody. So you, I mean that.
Oh, so there's no surviving child from that classroom.
Well, this child was a survivor. The child supposedly played dead.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's what I
played dead, right. and ran out of the room covered with blood, and the child is yet unnamed in the media, although the child has purportedly filed a lawsuit or made some kind of claim for $100 million. They said that's not really about money. Well, you know, $100 million is real money to me.
Well, why wouldn't there be something about the pictures or something about that kid who ran out covered with blood? Yeah, I read that. Well, so there's another weird thing. And then only 30 to 40 kids were evacuated from the school, it said. This is what some people are saying, that, you know, of all the news reports, everything you see, there's only this one image, you know, of a few, some kids being evacuated. And then there's that picture of that they show of this line of kids with their hands on the other person's shoulder. You know, they're supposed to they close their eyes. And the teacher's guiding them out. And somewhere I read that was, some of this can't be confirmed, but that was from a drill earlier. That wasn't even from that day. So I don't know. But that didn't tell you much. Why would they have kids close their eyes when they're outside, you know, they're safe and they're supposed to keep their eyes closed as they're walking wherever they're going. So they have to put their hands on the other person, the kid in front of them's shoulder.
You know, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard people walking to close their eyes. You know, I can't imagine anything more stupid than that. So there's something really strange with that.
Really? And then that brings to mind the situation with the teachers. I think another thing that they try to do with this is to make teachers into heroes. And, you just can trust your teacher, and every little kid they talk to, they say, oh, what do you have to say to your teacher? Oh, my, thank my teacher for looking after me. And then these teachers are supposed to have saved kids who really weren't in harm's way anyway. And all this stuff in order to, again, make parents feel that they can just put their kids into the hands of teachers and schools, and also to take kids out. It's just that communist thing, you know, take kids out of the control of their families and into the control of the government schools. Don't you think? I think that's a big part of it. I'm tired of these heroic teachers. You know, they all say, I just love teaching. Oh, I just love my kids. I've been a teacher, and I never heard a teacher say that. They're much more cynical about it. You know, they do a good job as teachers, especially these grade school teachers. But they don't love it like that, and they just don't talk like that, because there's lots of headaches with being a teacher and lots of headaches.
Well, what else do you expect them to say when they're on television, you know?
Well, yeah, but, you know. Okay, and then, as I said, these kids weren't very traumatized. The parents, what about the parents not being allowed to see their dead children? And the coroner said, oh, no, we didn't let them see their children. We didn't let them see their children. And so they contacted the funeral homes contacted the coroner's office. They came and picked up whatever kids they were supposed to take to their funeral home. And the parents were given a photograph of the faces of their kids that they supposedly took. The kids had from 3 to 12 or whatever as an average gunshot wounds, and they looked too bad. It was too traumatic for the parents. Now, why would the parents go along with that? Now, I think if this was real and these were real parents with real kids who were dead, they would not accept that. But you don't hear a peep that anybody made a peep about that.
I don't know what to say about that.
Well, what do you say about that, Martin? Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Yeah, I mean, okay. I don't really know what to say about that either. I mean, I'm fairly sure, fixed on my position. So it fits your
position, because if there really was an event and these kids were really murdered, these parents would not accept these things that have happened. You don't hear anything from these parents. And now, and I don't know, did they see a lot of funerals in that town? They talked about, I've never saw.
Well, that's a good point. You know, I mean, when you actually talk about the families, you know, if we accept the hypothesis that the whole thing was made up and nobody died, then of course you know, there are no real families of the victims who are then causing all sorts of hassles to the system by pushing for justice and finding out the truth, you know, for years to come, because there are no families of the victims, because the victims, you know, the whole thing was just was nonsense, you know. So instead, if they want to, they can actually wheel out some actors who continue to pretend to be the families of the victims, and they can keep a charade going for years to come. You know, we've in England, we've had news articles in the mainstream press kind of revisiting Hungerford, you know, 10 years later, 20 years later, 30 years later, you know, and these characters, you know, from the time pop up again and again, and you know, give their dubious eyewitness accounts and disappear, nowhere to be seen again, you know. So they can keep these things running you know, forever.
Yeah. And what about the idea of the government or whoever does it, intelligence, whatever, that putting out false leads? Like this picture of them finding a rifle in the trunk of the car, and it being believed for several days anyway, that they found the boy's rifle in the trunk of his car, and that he just had the handguns in there. And then they were talking about he shot him with this assault rifle, and he had to use that to break down, you know, shoot through the door and so on. And then when during the interview with the press conference with the coroner, somebody brought that up, and the police guy, state police, head of the state police that was standing there, he said, "That's not true. That's not true." And then they say it's not true that they found the assault rifle in the trunk of Adam Lanza's car. So there's another thing that was put out there, and I don't think all of these things are just from mix-ups on the internet. I think then, considering what your thesis, Martin, that they put out stuff in order to create a lot of discussion and distraction and confusion and keep people busy with this stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. I mean, there's all sorts of minor details that conspiracy theorists online can be debating for ages. You know, they can you can have intelligence agency operatives or agents may be the moderators of discussion forums, and they're sort of, they can keep the level of debate and the level of discussion at the kind of, you know, what about the guns in the boot of the car, and did the coroner say this or did he say that? So they kind of draw people into the script, into the storyline, and away from just the glaring truth, which is sort of hidden in plain view, that, you know, the whole thing was a fabrication. So, you know, it's very easy to sort of absorb people into all of the other sort of minor controversies and details here and there. And that could just be another way that the, you know, the story is used to control certain sections of the population and keep them at a certain level of knowledge.
Yeah, the truth movement. Oh, the truth movement is so busy finding the truth. And all they're doing is playing into the hands of the perpetrators of all this. And I think you put that really well. I that's what comes to my mind, and that's what 9/11 has turned into. It turned into that very quickly. I mean,
absolutely,
much bigger than this story, you know, and much more details that are to deal with. And they just got everybody caught up in all this stuff and debating it, and it's never gone anywhere. And the big story is the whole thing couldn't have happened. And what do you have any idea? What is your thought about I'm going to get into about the fakery, 9/11 fakery that what we saw on TV of these planes flying into these buildings was not even real?
The idea, you know, I don't know exactly how it was done, and I can't claim to, but it really wouldn't surprise me if very few people, if any, died on the day. But having said that, you know, what happened, you know, with the buildings being brought down, did cause serious damage in the environment. You know, with all the asbestos and all the other bits and pieces in the local area, and you know, so I mean, you know, it's still criminal. You know, even if nobody died, it's absolutely criminal. But mm-hmm. I mean, it's very difficult, isn't it? It's a very heavy subject, But we know about the big lie and how the big lie works. You know, so the bigger the better, you know, the more people will believe it, because it's just staggering to, you know, to accept that maybe the entire thing didn't even happen, you know, in the way we're led to believe.
Yes. Now, there's a strange story here that I'll just get in before we're done. Somehow a nurse, maybe you've read about this, Don, a nurse said she looked into Adam's eyes when he came into the office and recognized that he was Nancy Lanz's son. The nurse said Nancy was a wonderful and loving kindergarten teacher at their school. Nancy was never a teacher at that school, or a substitute or a volunteer. Of course, that's what's been determined. And yet they were saying, now, this was a school nurse who said this.
I don't know what to say about it. It's hard to, I don't know. I haven't done enough work on it, and the time, enough information hasn't come out yet.
Well, I don't think it's going to, because I haven't seen any new information in the last week or so, except what I've found in looking, you know, at different places, people talking about it and bringing up different videos and things to look at. But I haven't seen anything from the news media, and they've said, what is it that they said? They it's going to take a month or 2 months or something before they finish this investigation. Until then, nobody can say anything, whatever. But when as I said in the very beginning of the show, when that time is up, they're not going to have any more. They're not going to tell us any more than they've already told us.
Well, I agree. That's probably true.
So,
I think somebody would have to get on the ground there and do the digging, you know, go to the public records offices and old phone books, whatever, and see if these people ever really existed. If they did, they would be listed in phone books. They would be listed. There would be birth records, death records.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can't eradicate everything.
Well, somebody needs to investigate every one of those children. They're all named. They have pictures of them. And we've already learned that two of them just moved there this year, supposedly. And I think that one is a totally fictional family, that Parker family. And I guess then they're all fictional families. But somebody would need to do that. And I suppose the person who started looking into it seriously would run into some problems.
I believe that's true, too.
Well, let me ask Martin. We've still got about 10 minutes. I haven't talked to you, Martin, at all before you came on the show. I'm really glad you came on. I just think you've been a terrific guest and given us some terrific information, and I'm going to look on your form. But what is your how do you see the Jewish race fitting into this, as far as you talked about NATO and military intelligence?
Well, okay. I think I always like to sort of recommend, you know, Professor Carol Quigley, you know, Georgetown University as a good source to read, you know, if you want to sort of get up to speed with these things. And although he obviously only really takes you up, I think, to the 1970s, maybe at the very latest. But, you know, there's some very good, material in Tragedy and Hope and the Anglo-American Establishment and a few of his other books. Sort of explore the origins of, you know, what we're going into now as maybe something that originates partly, at least, with the Milner Group and the Rhodes Foundation and so on in London, which later became the Royal Institute for International Affairs and the CFR in the States, and mm-hmm. Then later on, NATO, which is United Nations Agency. So I think his general view was that you have the round table groups. Like the CFR, the Scottish Rite Freemasons, Knights Templar, I suppose essentially, you've got the British, Dutch, and
okay,
Spanish.
Just hold on a second. Hold on, caller. We've got a caller on the line, but I want to let you finish what you're saying, Martin. So I just want to let him know that I know he's there. Okay,
yeah, he actually described it as an Anglophile network, which it operates in a similar way to how the radical right believes that the communists operate, and that they're not averse to working with the Marxist International, the communists, if it suits their ultimate goals, and they very often do. So I think we're really talking about a blend of the top banks in London and New York City and so on, and the Marxist International, the communist groups and so on, which are kind of used as a tool to achieve minority rule or to maintain minority rule over the rest of us, you know, because after all, I'm sure you'll agree, and when you look at places like Chicago and London, you know, occasionally you will get a relatively conservative mayor being elected. But the voter demographics don't really support that. You know, these cities are too far gone, you know, to third world immigration. And it doesn't seem quite right. You know, you think maybe some voter and some kind of a vote rigging is going on there in some form. You know, so somebody is selecting these people. And you know, that's the big question. Where exactly is it all coming from? Is it coming from the European black nobility? Is it coming from Italian and French royal family and exile and you know, the royals in Britain and the Netherlands? Do they play a role? You know, the Bilderberg group is part of this, you know, but, you know, to what extent? And, you know, it's a very difficult question to answer.
Who are the most powerful people? I understand that, but if you talk about the royals and so on, I don't think they're that powerful. Although they do have a lot of money invested, they are very wealthy. But you know, I think the most powerful people in the world is this Jewish elite. So they have to be playing a leading role in all of this, I think.
Absolutely, I think.
But it may not be exactly the way a lot of us talk about it, or some people talk about it. It may be more involved in monetary global rulership.
The Eastern European views are definitely overrepresented among these sort of groups, you know, communist or social democratic groups. There's no doubt about that. So I wouldn't dispute that at all. But you know, I think I just believe we're really talking about people who old money as well, that have a very similar modus operandi. You know, they know all the tricks, you know, the psychological manipulation techniques for how to manage the masses. And you know, there's definitely kind of overlap between these different interest groups, that they kind of think in a similar way, really. So to a point where it's like, you know, is it one and the same group? Is it two or three different groups? You know, this is what I mean. It's very difficult to pinpoint.
Right. Okay, let's let our caller have a say if he's actually here. Are you there, caller? This is 202 area code.
Yes, I am here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you fine. Hello.
Okay, thank you, Carolyn. First off, let's not let the big one go. World Trade Center 7 is an obvious controlled demolition. Every time we talk about anything else, we let them off the hook. I've seen it again and again. I was on Piper's show 6 or 7 years ago. I was the first one that called it the smoking gun. And it's still the smoking gun. Forget about Sandy Hook. Not totally, but put it to the side. Stick with the obvious controlled demolition of World Trade Center 7, and don't vary from it. That's where the Kaiju gets us into negotiating and talking about things that are not necessary.
Well, let's, I think, though, that Sandy Hook...
Let's leave the details for the court case.
Okay, I understand what you're saying. Sorry for interrupting, but, you know, I think that Sandy Hook is something that they just did, and I think it should be talked about and related to 9/11 and help people to understand how 9/11 happened, and even help people understand how something like the Holocaust hoax could happen.
The point is that every time we talk about other things, rather than the worst mistake they ever made, which was the smoking gun of 9/11, the most obvious controlled demolition I've ever seen in my entire life, and I'm 65 years old, every time we vary from that, we give them time for negotiation, for talking. No, just keep pushing. And
well, we should never talk about anything except 9/11.
No, we should never talk about anything about 9/11 other than the World Trade Center 7 controlled demolition.
Oh, I see.
Obvious controlled demolition. If we get away from that, then they've got us into court. They've got us into their area of negotiation. No. You don't negotiate with these people.
So you don't like media fakery, but media fakery could be being used in a lot of other cases.
FBI on the front page of the Washington Post a week ago Sunday, on the right hand corner above the fold, front page, Sunday Washington Post, they admitted that the FBI has been lying in court right and left, and nobody talks about that minor article. No. The point is that World Trade Center 7 is the smoking gun, not just of 9/11, but of all the Kaiju operations for the last 50 years. And we get all this obfuscation going every place else. Oh, there's electron beams into World Trade 1 and 2. There's this, that. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Stick to World Trade Center 7 and keep pushing. Never vary from the obvious controlled demolition of World Trade Center 7, and then we'll win.
Okay. Thank you very much, caller.
Okay.
I appreciate that. Coming in at the last minute there. And I want to say a proper goodbye here to my guests. So do you have any last minute? I want to thank you. I think this has been a really great program to start Saturday afternoon with Carolyn off again for the new year. And I've already thanked Martin. And would you have any last minute words that you want to say, Don?
I think we need to keep an open mind and try to research this as much as we can. And for God's sakes, don't give up on the right to keep and bear arms, because they can disarm us, and they're trying very hard to do it. And the Sandy Hook event, whether real or contrived, is the springboard to new anti-gun laws in the United States.
Yeah, I think we need to talk more about Sandy Hook, and we need to explain it better, and I think we need to... to understand, like you say, continue researching and have an open mind. What about you, Martin? We're not getting our cues because of the calls, so we won't hear the closing music, but we've got 30 seconds left now.
Yeah, I mean, thanks for having me on the show, and I definitely think, you know, the Americans should fight for their right to defend themselves. You know, absolutely, and it's worth looking into the subject in much more detail. I think people need to know that this is a been happening a lot. It's not new. People don't like to admit that they were tricked, but something has to give. And I highly recommend looking into these things in a bit more depth.
All right. Well, our music is on. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us, and good day for this week.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit Carolyn's website at carolynyager.com.